Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
A few years ago, my brother told me he doesn't go to church on Father's Day anymore. Because every time they have Mother's Day, they would like celebrate mothers and everything that mothers bring. But on Father's Day, they would tell all the men what they were doing wrong and how they could be better fathers. And there's, when he said that, I thought, I think that's sometimes kind of true. I don't know that we celebrate fathers so much as, exactly that. And fathers and mothers play very different roles in our lives. Mothers, they nurture and protect. And fathers encourage and challenge. And I think that's one of the reasons why an absent or abusive father is so devastating, because we miss that encouragement and the challenge. And God is a loving father. And sometimes people have a hard time with that, especially if you've had a negative example. But God is a father who loves us like a mother who nurtures and comforts, but also like a father who challenges and encourages. For the past couple of hundred years, outside voices of the church have perceived the church in North America or in the Western world to be a domesticating or civilizing agent in our culture, where men are increasingly feminized. And so you don't see, issues, I guess they would call it toxic masculinity issues, and I don't think masculinity is inherently toxic, but there are all the negative sides of masculinity are addressed in a church setting, but the other side of it isn't necessarily addressed. The encouraging to challenge, to go out and conquer and solve problems and all of that. But our Father is a challenging Father, and the bar of challenge is high. We're in our current series, The Cross. Today's message is entitled Carrying the Cross, and today I want to share with you the challenge of following Jesus. We have message notes available on crosslands.live. If you go into your smart device and just punch in crosslands.live, and there's a box there that says Sunday message, and there we have application questions there. How do I apply this on a Monday to Saturday? How can I dig a little deeper? And we should have time at the end to entertain text messages. If you have a comment or question relevant to the message today, my number's on the screen at the top, and we'll deal with those. And so last week we had a bit of a break from the series, but 2 weeks ago we talked about what it meant to live the crucified life. And if you missed that, I would encourage you to check it out online. You can subscribe to the podcast as well. But in following Jesus, and this is what we are here at Crosslands Church, we're a community of people that are striving to follow Jesus, striving to live that crucified life. And it brings out this whole new absolute identity that transcends all other identities, male, female, political identities, cultural identities, ethnic identities. And so there's this idea. There's this sense that our primary identity is as a child of God and follower of Jesus. And what does that mean? So we're going to look at a passage in Matthew today. It's in Matthew 16, 21 to 24. And it says this, "From then on, Jesus began to tell his disciples plainly that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and that he would suffer many terrible things at the hands of the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of the religious law. He would be killed, but on the third day he would be raised from the dead." Now the context here is that Jesus is talking to his disciples and he questions them and he says, "Who are people saying that I am?" And they say, "Well, some people say you're a prophet, some people say you're the prophet." And he says, "Yeah, but who do you say that I am?" And one of his most, daring followers, Peter, he's the one that's always, shooting his mouth off. And he says, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus turns to him and he says, "God has revealed this to you. This isn't something you came up with on your own." And there are huge implications for that messianic title. Messianic expectations that in that culture meant a whole lot of things. And primarily it meant that the Messiah would come and overthrow their enemies and elevate Israel to its proper place in the world. That's what the Messiah was going to do. He was going to restore the temple, purify the people, and kill all their enemies. And in that context, Jesus says, "Okay, now we're headed to Jerusalem where all the leaders are going to beat me and kill me." Verse 22, "But Peter took him aside." This is the one who just said, "You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God." "Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. 'Heaven forbid, Lord,' he said, 'this will never happen to you.' Jesus turned to Peter and said, 'Get away from me, Satan.'" Imagine saying that to one of your best friends. "'Get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view and not from God's. And in verse 24, he says, then Jesus said to his disciples, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must turn from your selfish ways. Take up your cross and follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. He counters those messianic expectations. His own closest followers misunderstood his trajectory. They didn't understand his destination. They signed up to follow the Messiah, the winner, the one who is going to topple their enemies. That's what they signed up for. They didn't sign up for defeat. It's at this point when, in John's version of the gospel, he starts to say these kinds of things. People start leaving because they have a hard time taking their own agendas and dreams and to the position of a cross. So what does that mean, take up the cross? What does that mean to take up your cross? A few hundred years ago, there were Portuguese missionaries that ended up in China, and they heard rumors of a people living in China that were known as the people of the cross. And so they did the investigation and found out. Now, the Christian church had made it to China by about 600, 700, and at one point there was a thriving Christian church in China, long before Western missionaries got there. They went east through, you know, Syria, Babylon, and India, and there was a thriving Christian church expressed in a Chinese way in China. There's all kinds of archaeological evidence. This was really neat. But by that point, there had been a ton of persecution, and it was made illegal. But they heard of these people of the cross, and there was a community of people that were living, and they would regularly make the sign of the cross. But they didn't know why they did it anymore. So what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus? Because it isn't about drawing a cross. It isn't about people who draw a cross, although people might draw a cross. It isn't about a lot of people in our culture. It isn't about wearing a cross, although people who follow Jesus might wear a cross. It's about people who pick up and carry a cross. I don't mean that literally, because otherwise you'd look around and go, there's not many followers of Jesus today. I saw one guy online, and he was going through a subway carrying a cross, and he went on an escalator, and he got to the top, and the cross got stuck in the roof of the escalator. He's like, he's stuck there, and I don't know, it's kind of funny. Maybe not for him. But what does it look like to follow Jesus? I know in North America, there's a few stereotypes. For some people, what does it look like to follow Jesus means you're white, probably male, and you vote Republican. That's what some people see that image in their mind, which it kind of blows my mind because it's a far remove from what Jesus did and asked people to do. Some people see the opposite. They see in North America, someone who follows Jesus is a liberal in a black gospel church who sings very dynamically better than we do here, right? But those are cultural stereotypes or cultural caricatures of what it means to follow Jesus. So what does it mean? I found this story years and years and years ago, and I've never said it on a Sunday morning, and I've been holding on it to this story for just a time like this. So there was a man, he was troubled and burdened by his situation in life, and he prayed to God that God would lift his burden. And so day after day he prayed and prayed and prayed that his life would be easier. I find that's something that we tend to pray a lot. Let my life be easier. And so one day, Jesus came to him and said, my child, what troubles you? And he said, my life is full of turmoil. It's become too much to bear. And he said, I need help. I just can't keep going on. And so Jesus just empathetically felt his anguish and decided that, you know, it's time to do something about this. And he told him that. And the man was so happy his prayers were going to be answered. And he said immediately his burden already felt lighter. So Jesus took the man to a room and stopped in front of the door. And when he opened the door, what the man saw, like, it blew his mind, because in the room it was filled with crosses, little crosses and big crosses and giant crosses and pretty crosses and rough crosses. And the man was bewildered. He looked at Jesus and says, how would this help him? And Jesus explained to him that every cross represented a burden that people carry. Little burdens, big burdens, every burden in between. And at this point, Jesus offered the man the opportunity to choose his burden. And so the man was excited. He thought, you know, finally he's able to have some control over his life. And he looked around for just the right cross. He saw a tiny little cross back in the corner. And it was the smallest cross in the room. And after a bit of thought, he pointed to the cross and said, "That one, Lord, that's the one I want." And Jesus said, "Are you sure, my son?" And he said, "Yes, that's the most definitely. That's the one I'm choosing." And Jesus said to him, "My child, you've chosen your own cross. It's the burden you already carry." Now, I'll tell you something. I was reading the story in the context of preparing this message, and I thought, this is a perfect story. But I thought, that story is completely wrong. It's completely wrong because your cross is not your circumstances. We all have crappy circumstances. The circumstances that we must passively or stoically bear in life and carry our situation, and our burdens are put there by maybe just life or the world or by other people. Maybe you blame God for the burdens you carry. That's not our cross. It's just your life. People deal with really bad things, maybe a chronic illness or difficult teenagers or a job you hate or worse, a boss you hate or a spouse you found difficult to love. Those are our circumstances that we carry. But that's not your cross. Your cross is not about you. It's a self-denying mission. Something that's not put on you, something that you pick up. Jesus said, pick up and carry your cross. It's different. Nobody in the first century, hearing Jesus say that to his disciples, his own disciples, wouldn't think, well, Jesus is asking us to carry the burden that is placed upon us by life. That's not what a cross was. A cross was a means of execution, one of the most horrible that humans ever designed, and intended to kill somebody in agonizing pain and humiliation. That's what a cross was. It's not a difficult circumstances. Your cross is a mission that you've been assigned. That's what your cross is. God has something for you to do that is difficult and it can take you to the end of your life. That's what your cross is. See, and that's totally in contrast to the aims of our culture. Your culture says, move up, get a promotion, get a better job, get the best education you can so you can make the most money, and upgrade your car to a BMW. We were watching this show. It's a stupid show. We actually stopped watching it because I just couldn't tolerate the stupidness. Actually, Michelle couldn't tolerate me complaining about the stupidness. So it's sort of like a fantasy science fiction show that takes place 1,000 years in the future, and it takes place somewhere in San Francisco, and they're crossing the Golden Gate Bridge and making their way through all these rusted hulks of cars. Really, like in 1,000 years, a car is completely rusted out in 100 years. Like it's gone. There's nothing left. But in the show, it's 1,000 years later, and there's these rusted cars. If you're aiming for a BMW, you're aiming for something that's going to be dust in 150 years. That's small. I hate to tell you. That's kind of like, it's going to get a ding in the first 6 months, and it's going to destroy your life. And 9 months later, it's like, whatever, it's my old car. That's small. That's a small dream. And so our culture says, get the best you can for you and yours. And in contrast, Jesus says, pick up your cross, and your cross has more to do with other people. It's not about you. It's you giving your life for something that's beyond you. We did a message, I don't know, a couple of months ago now. This series is going on for a long time. It's coming to the end very soon. But we talked about in the passage in Philippians 2, Jesus came and emptied himself to become a servant to all. And Jesus is calling us to make disciples of people that are not consumers, but servants. Our culture creates consumers. Jesus is calling us to create servants, people that live their lives for other people. That's what we're called to do. And this is not like a few special people. Like you look around the room and you go, okay, well, there that person there and that person. But no, we're all called to do that. And so each one of us is called to do this. Jesus' last instructions in this book that I read from, his last instructions to disciples is go into all the world and make disciples, teaching them to obey everything I've said. He says that to all of his followers. Your cross is directly tied to the mission that God has for you, the assignment that he has for you. And there's a consequence. And the consequence is something that you face because it's going to cost you. But the consequence also has to do with those people, which are your assignment. Because if you refuse to take up that cross that God has for you, that is a consequence for the people that are your assignment. Eternal consequences. That's a hard thing, but carrying your cross is not an easy thing, right? There are people within your reach, your family, your friends, your coworkers, the neighbor that irritates you, and all of those people that are there for you to reach that maybe nobody else here might reach. They might not have contact with those people. Your classmates, the person that steals your lunch at work. Those are the people that are within your grasp. And your mission that God has for you is all those people. And sometimes we numb ourselves to... There was a guy that wrote a book some years ago called Holy Discontent. And there's sometimes when something really, really irritates you about the world, not because it's about you, but because the world is wrong. And you just feel like you need or you want to do something about it. And then you, many times we respond to that by choosing not to think about it and binging the next Netflix series. God places holy discontent in your life to give you an agenda, to give you an assignment, something for you to take on that's wildly beyond what you can do. But it starts with one person at a time. And the key to that is discipleship. There are consequences that are beyond you. And there's also a cost to you. Because when you take on that agenda, we're sort of in the front of a behind-the-scenes spiritual battle. We have an enemy of our soul, and those people that are your assignment also have an enemy for your soul, for their soul. And when you start to rock the boat in that way, you can set yourself up as a target. So you have a choice, right? You take up your cross, which means now you're in a battle, or you leave it there and you waste the rest of your life, and it's easy. So what do you want? You want your life to count, or you want it to be easy? Really, that's the choice. Do you want your life to count or do you want it to be easy? There are repercussions when you take up your cross because of that spiritual battle that's going on behind the scenes. And here's a question. In the life that you are living right now as a follower of Jesus, are you a threat to the enemy? Or is he okay with you the way you are? That's where there's a price to pay. You know, we're pretty comfortable here in North America. I don't know. I'm not making any predictions or prognostications, but there may come a time when it's no longer comfortable to be a follower of Jesus in North America. And I don't mean like, oh, people in the media don't like Christians or somebody was mean to you. I mean like in other countries where it's like illegal, where you could lose your life for being a Christian. We don't know that that's never going to happen here. We really don't. But the reality is that life can be more difficult when you live with purpose. Because when you live with purpose and influence, when you're not defaulting to the path of least resistance, which is what our culture tells us to do, that means you're going to experience resistance. When you take the path of more resistance, you're going to experience resistance. Purpose, influence, meaning, taking up your cross, choosing the path of discipleship, choosing to make disciples, means you're going to experience more resistance in life. You want easy or you want life to count? I read this illustration recently that if a watch is water resistant, it doesn't mean it doesn't get wet. It means it has the capability of resisting water. And each one of us following Jesus doesn't mean you never experience a complete lack of resistance. It means he makes you capable of withstanding the issues that come your way when you're picking up your cross. He makes you strong. That's what a father does. Challenge and encouragement. Make you strong to fulfill your mission and to withstand that resistance. Anybody here want to stay weak? No hands, just mine. We are called to be strong. We are called to make a difference in the world. There was a book that came out, probably like 10 years ago now, by Jim Collins, Good to Great. One of the best books I ever read. It's not a Christian book. And he talks about two animals that compete for survival. And one is the fox. The fox is cunning, it's clever, it's really smart. And it can attack and find food in 100 different ways. Very creative. And it's trying to eat the hedgehog. And the hedgehog is not that smart. The hedgehog just does one thing. The hedgehog rolls up into a little ball and all the spikes point outwards. And regardless of how smart and cunning and clever the fox is, it can't overcome that. That one thing the hedgehog does best cannot be overcome. And in our North American church, sometimes we're trying to find clever things to do and creative things to do to survive, attract more people. I don't know. But really, there's one thing we're called to do. And we're called to perfect that and do it over and over and over again, like the hedgehog has the one thing. And that one thing we're called to do is make disciples. That's the one thing. We follow Jesus in our relationship with him, but we're called to make disciples. We're called to figure out how to do that and perfect it and do it over and over and over and over again. And so the book with the watch illustration, I was reading that, and they said, in that book, they were talking about this whole making disciples thing, and they said, you hear sermons all the time about how to make your life better, how to do better financially, how to be a better spouse, how to be a better parent, how to be a better worshiper, but we're called to do one thing, make disciples. And that is unbeatable. If you have a church that is full of financially sound great parents and spouses and all of that, that church could still die out in one generation. Every church is one generation away from extinction. But a church that is making disciples will keep going on and on and on and on and on. Because that's what we're supposed to be doing, making disciples. And by making disciples, I don't mean educating Christians, okay? I don't mean taking people that are followers of Jesus, putting in a class and teaching them more information. That's not what making disciples is. Making disciples is finding people that are not followers of Jesus and making them mature followers of Jesus. That's what making a disciple is. Teaching them to obey everything that Jesus commanded. And so that hedgehog idea, what's the one thing we're supposed to do? In carrying our cross, it sounds complicated. It sounds like you need to know a lot and all of that, but it's really simple. It's two things. It's really only two things. Follow Jesus passionately and communicate that to others. Follow Jesus passionately and communicate that to others through your actions and words. See, the self-sacrificing mission of Jesus, the carrying of our cross, is always about other people. Jesus died for others. He didn't die for himself. He died for others. His last command was make disciples. Engage with people who are not followers of Jesus to make them followers of Jesus. I don't mean like invite somebody over to coffee and do like a network sales thing. Oh, now that you're here, let me lock the door and hit you up with tracts. No, you build relationships with people. That's it. You build relationships with people because if you're passionately following him, it doesn't take long before you have an opportunity to speak because sooner or later they're going to ask. I'm not talking about going to the mall and handing out little pamphlets to people that really don't want them. Have a passionate relationship with Jesus and have relationships with other people. It's really that simple. That sounds way too simple. No, it's that simple. It really is. I'm not saying it's easy, okay, but it's simple. So what's the process? How do you do it? The first thing is dig deep. What I mean by that is passionately pursue your relationship with God. Dig deep, because there's a few aspects of that. It empowers you. It gives you God's heart. It gives you God's eyes to see. It gives you God's ears to hear. You find your truth in Scripture. You get that in you. So that it's what you breathe. You find a connection to God in prayer, because when you're rocking the boat and the enemy comes at you, when you're digging deep with God, that's where he strengthens you. You go out without that, well, good luck. But you dig deep. You passionately follow Jesus. Don't go out unprepared. Passionately follow him. And listen to him. How do you do that? Well, that's where we hammer on all the time at Crossing Church, about reading the Bible, right? Because God will speak to you through Scripture, but it also enables you to recognize his voice when he speaks to you through the day. When you're on assignment, when you're saying yes to God's assignment, it's less important to believe in prayer than it is to actually pray. You ever been to a prayer meeting when... If it's an hour prayer meeting, they spend 50 minutes talking about prayer, and the last 10 minutes, they squeeze the prayer in. I've been to those. It's frustrating. It's like, I thought we were here to pray, and we were listening to a sermon on prayer. It's less important to believe in prayer than it is to actually pray. And when you're on assignment, and the crap starts hitting the fan, that's when you pray because you need to. So dig deep, passionately follow Jesus. In Revelation the writer of the book says to one of the churches, you know, you're doing everything right, but you've lost your first love. Dig deep, reconnect with the love that God has for you and your love for him. Passionately follow Jesus. And the second thing is engage with those around you. Sometimes we want to separate from the unwashed masses. I don't know. You know, like, oh, those are evil people. Well, what do you expect? You know, we judge people by God's standards. They're not in relationship with him. What do you expect? But Jesus is the one that's hanging around with traitors and hookers. Imagine if that was on the headlines today. Engage with people around you. Give God opportunity to work in your life because you are hanging around with the people that he wants to reach. Around the world, there is unprecedented persecution against Christians, beyond our imagination right now. I mentioned a few weeks ago that Newsweek is saying that there's persecution against Christians like never before in history. It's happening right now. And we don't deal with that. You know what we struggle with? Distraction, passivity, consumerism. I heard years ago of Christians in China that were visiting North America, and somebody had said to them, you know, we're praying for you that the persecution would stop. And they said, oh, please don't pray that we become like you. We don't want to deal with the passivity that you struggle with in North America. I don't know that we even struggle with it. Pretty happy with it. They don't want to be like us. You know, carry your cross, passionately follow Jesus, engage with people around you. Why don't people do that? I think the biggest reason people, followers of Jesus, don't do that, the biggest reason is because they feel unqualified. I'm not ready. Maybe one day I'll be ready. I'll get a degree, a Master of Divinity or something like that. Then I'll be ready. But see, it's you get ready by the doing, not the waiting. You're never going to be good enough. You just got to start. You're called to carry your cross, not the world. It's not a lack of capability that people have. It's a lack of momentum. God speaks to you when you're in motion. He directs you when you're moving. You can't steer a parked car. You start moving, and then God can guide you. He guides you as you're moving, not as you're waiting for someday. It's not a lack of perfection that you need or that stops us. It's a lack of obedience. That's what stunts our growth. When you respond to God's direction, even imperfectly, yeah, that's okay. But that's when you grow. It's not a lack of knowledge that's the issue. It's a lack of action. You mature through the doing of it. We're called to do and learn as we do. And so maybe you're here going, well, you know, I'm not sure I'm ready. Well, just start one day at a time. Here's a prayer for you. First thing in the morning, God, what's your assignment for me today? And then keep your ears tuned to that, like a radio dial. What's your assignment for me today? Watch God's agenda unfold for you into tomorrow and into next week and into next month. It's not complicated. It really isn't. It has more to do with willingness than capability. Passionately pursue God, authentically engage those in relationship around you, and watch what happens. It's 25 after. I have a text message. Happy Father's Day. Thank you. And this is not from one of my sons. I'm somebody's father that I don't know. Okay, that's the only text message I have. I'm going to ask that you would stand. And I want to ask you this question. Where are you in your journey, in your spiritual journey? Everybody's on a spiritual journey. Everyone here is on some kind of spiritual journey. And maybe in your spiritual journey, you have not yet become a follower of Jesus. And I want to extend an invitation for you to do that today. How do you even start this spiritual life? It's as simple as ABC. It starts with A, admit your need for God. B, believe that he has more for you, and he's made that possible through Jesus' death and resurrection. And C, commit your life to him. That means saying no to the way you used to live and saying yes to his way of living. It's really that simple. I'm not saying it's easy, but it is simple. And so if you want to follow Jesus today, you need to just tell somebody. You know, go to the information desk, talk to somebody there or one of the pastors if you see them around. I want to become a follower of Jesus today. And if you don't have the ability to connect with somebody like that, you can go onto crosslands.live and there's a box there that says follow Jesus. Fill in your contact information and we'll help you get started on this whole following Jesus thing. And we have a whole bunch of next steps on the screen there, but I want to highlight one. Get active, volunteer to serve. That's part of like the picking up your cross. And there's two things. First of all, is the engaging with people that don't know Jesus, sharing Jesus with them, and be part of what we're doing here. Get involved in something. Get your feet moving. Get the wheels moving so God can steer you into his purpose for you for the rest of your life. It's in the doing that the training happens. Volunteer to serve. Okay, I have another text message that showed up. This is a bit late. Yes, it is. But I read this earlier this morning. You can't control the length of your life, but you can control the depth. Billy Graham. That's a good quote. You can't control the length of your life. We're obsessed with health and self-preservation and insurance in our culture, right? Safety. That's what we're obsessed with. But God says, I have a meaningful life for you to live. Pick up your cross and make a difference in the world. You don't just have value, and you do have value. You have supreme value because God created you and loves you. But you also have importance because God has something for you to do. There are people around you that nobody else can reach, and the consequence of their eternity could be in your hands, whether you pick up your cross or you abandon it. Your loving Father has a challenge for you. Will you pick up your cross? Will you listen for your assignment? Tomorrow morning, God, what is your assignment for me today? Let me tune my ears to your direction. Let me pray for you. Father, I thank you that you love each one of us supremely and that we don't have to earn your love, that you love us unconditionally, but you also love us so much that you have more for us, that your intention for us is to grow strong. Your intention for us is to make a difference in this world. Your intention for us is to carry your kingdom forward. And Father, we're easily intimidated and easily threatened. But Father, I pray for each one of us right now that in our mind you would plant the face or the name of somebody that we know that needs you. Father, I pray that you would help us to engage with your assignment for us. Father, help us to dig deep in a relationship with you, to passionately follow you, to invest in our worship of you, in our learning from you, in our hearing from you, but also to pick up that cross and take on our daily, weekly, monthly, and our life assignment from you. Thank you. Immediately following the service, we turned Theater One into a prayer room, and there are those of you here, you know, you may need to spend some time in prayer and engage with God. Don't waste the time. Spend time. Wade's providing an atmosphere for you to do that. And we also challenge people to have a meaningful conversation with one person you've never met before. We just ask you to do that in the lobby so that people can pray in here. And so take the time to commit yourself to God and his agenda for you, his assignment for you. I want to thank you for coming today and invite you back for another service. We'd love to have you back. Thanks for coming.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.